if you're a business person wanting to come to Japan and set up, what's the number one thing you need to know, other than the language?
Coming to Japan for the first time.
Yeah, or wanting to set up in Japan.
Take some advice from somebody, because it's a country that very much works by introductions. So just knock on doors cold or ring up companies without some groundwork done is not going to progress things very fast at all. So you need to either be working through NZTE or using contacts from the Japan New Zealand Business Council in some way, or maybe Jetro can help. But certainly preparing in advance, and I think the first visit, has to be an introductory visit, just sort of getting your name card in front of people and so on, and explaining your business a bit, and just about basically building up a relationship. Just takes time in that respect. I think that's probably. That would be my advice, and the business council should work that there's companies already dealing with Japan who might be prepared to sort of share some, information on how they've got a foothold in the market, or, talking with New Zealanders up here, just to get their experience. Would be the way to go, I think.
Is it a more competitive market here than at home, do you think? The businesses come over here and tend to come up against more competition than they expected?
It's a larger market, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a large market. I think one of the difficulties you face in Japan, and it's because of the size, is just for someone of a company of a relatively small size in New Zealand, how do you position yourself in the market? Because if you're wanting to sell some products in Wellington or Hamilton, if you had an outlet, reasonably located in a street that got a little bit of foot traffic and so on, you'd be probably good. But here you could have one place in Tokyo and nobody would know you're there. This is a real challenge, I think. I think a lot of Japanese, for example, would like New Zealand honey or New Zealand cosmetics, New Zealand toothpaste, but you can't find it anywhere. Japanese who go to New Zealand try it and they think, oh, that's great. But where do you get it? Where do you get it here in Japan? There's no New Zealand specialty New Zealand goods outlet. The only one that I know of is a little outlet in Nikko by the Toshogu Shrine, which the chief priest has established there, and he uniquely New Zealand products. His idea is that he's got a business hotel alongside that, and where Japanese used to become married at five-star hotels, have their receptions there and buy gifts, because you have to buy a gift for every guest at a Japanese wedding. Mm-hmm. And he's thinking maybe Japanese guests that have their receptions at his business hotel will buy New Zealand products. It's quite hard, because if you say yes, you can buy Japanese products at such and such supermarket, but that might be sort of 20 train stops away from where the person wants to do the shopping. If you're not, it's sort of for a New Zealand company to get that sort of critical mass and spread on the ground that people who want to buy their products can buy them conveniently without traipsing across town or sort of doing a search to find out where they are. I think, and maybe as a consequence of that, a lot of New Zealand products are basically inputs to final products, like New Zealand natural cheese is an input to Japanese processed cheese, or goes into pizzas or that sort of thing. It's sort of it's a business to business type relationship or business to customer type relationship rather than to business to consumer. And if it's not business to consumer, it's hard to build up the relationship that really counts. to get the sort of ongoing brand recognition, et cetera, et cetera. So it's quite hard. But I imagine, I mean, China's also a big market. I don't know whether there's some similar problems that, you know, challenges that New Zealanders face there. But I think it's just, for a small, medium-sized company, how do you, establish a counterpart here in Japan, and then even if you've got that counterpart, how do you get space on the ground so that people who want to buy your products know where it is and can buy it conveniently? Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say.
That's right. I mean, the two biggest issues I think in Japan is one, that is a relationship-based business culture. So they have to feel that they trust you before they think, okay, well, show us your product. Number two is that huge middleman cut that they have here. So introduction comes at a price.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
In my observation.
Yes. The NZTE guys are probably a better place to comment on this than me, but I would have thought they'd have to find somebody who is prepared to stock their beer, maybe a restaurant or a bar. Because they're sort of competing against this huge sort of Suntory, Asahi, Kirin labels that are just, if someone says, "Would you like a beer?" I mean, that. You think, well, what should I have?
The automatic choice of those three.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah. And so, so if people are going to look beyond that, it's got to be in some bar that maybe has a reputation for sort of a good selection of high quality international beer, and some sort of a beer connoisseur or whatever would like to come to it. Or, I guess ideally, if they can find a restaurant that is promoting New Zealand beef or New Zealand lamb or something like that. And there, I think, maybe they would do well to look to Hokkaido. I mean, this is Hokkaido or Okinawa, because, Hokkaido is where New Zealand lamb sales are concentrated, mainly for sort of style they call Genghis Khan. Sort of originally it was Genghis Khan was, the warrior, and I think they used to cook their meat on their helmet, sort of thing. So Genghis Khan is sort of sliced lamb, cut really thinly, and cooked over a hot plate. And it's really a delicious meal, quite honestly, but it's ideal to have beer with. So, if this is what I would suggest, that they would look to try and find an outlet that's sort of specializing in New Zealand lamb that can at the same time complement it with New Zealand beer. Look for some sort of niche like that. And I think, right. I say sort of niche because I think it's quite an ask for a New Zealand producer to be targeting the Japan market as a whole. It's just so big. When it comes to the gift-giving season in Japan, which is at New Year and other festivals, it's sort of a tradition to exchange gifts. So maybe they can suggest it would be good to have New Zealand beer as a gift to give to customers. I mean, just this is the way I'd sort of suggest that they look to leverage off established relationships with New Zealand with a quality New Zealand product. I know that, for example, we did this in a small way. We gave some Manuka honey to he was then on the chairman of Nippon Yusen, which is the largest shipping company. And he's got linkages with New Zealand. We gave him the honey and he tried it. And he gave us a ring and said, "Oh, that honey was terrific. I'd like to use it as my New Year gift too." Mm. So, got some sales in that way. So I think that's perhaps, I think it's sort of working through established relationships to see if you can find niches, I would suggest for a company, rather than just trying just trying to win on the merits of quality alone is really quite difficult. And the other thing about it is, if the packaging is not of the same level as the product itself, you're going to be struggling to make sales too, because packaging is so important here.
Yeah. And you say sort of the niche market, the sort of the, which in New Zealand terms usually means something small, like, you know, you've got a tiny thing here, but because of the size of the market, yeah, total niche is still
it's
pretty
huge.
Big, right?
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even have to make it like national wide. I mean, to be successful, everyone always seems to concentrate on Tokyo, but it's so over marketed here. But, you know, you could find little places, little pockets throughout Japan.
Yeah.
That's a big market in itself.
I mean, I think things like, you know, if you did find a New Zealand company with an established partner, I mean, and they liked the beer, and maybe you could also talk about the labelling of it, because maybe you could have it, you know, with, you know, the president's signature on it or something like that. I mean, just to sort of, I don't know, somehow differentiate it and make it sort of special to have received it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I'd be sort of suggesting to them.
I mean, is there I know the All Blacks are huge here, I mean, this is going by the fact that I've seen, you know, a dozen rugby jerseys, and I think all but two of them were All Black jerseys.
Canterbury, big label too.
Yeah.
Big label.
Yeah. We were at Prince Chichibu Station.
Yes.
Stadium, and right beside there was a
Canterbury shop.
Wellington jerseys in the window. Is that something that, you know, New Zealand brands like to use? They can use that sort of imagery, that not necessarily All Blacks because they're tied up with their own sponsorship deals, but rugby sort of players, the guys who are over here in teams and things.
We are trying to get as much mileage as we can out of New Zealand hosting the World Cup in 2011, and then of course you've got 2015 England, but then 2019 Japan. So we see good opportunities for already it's happening, and Japanese referees are going down to New Zealand for training. Toshiba has been down in New Zealand and played Waikato, and they beat them actually, and surprisingly. And I mean, they've got something like six New Zealanders playing for the All Japan team. And then something like 46, 50 odd New Zealanders playing in the top league of rugby here. So New Zealand, well, All Blacks and beyond that, New Zealand is the preeminent name in rugby, and we just got to keep it that way.
Winning the cup next year might help.
And the other thing, the way that rugby is structured in Japan, it's sponsored by large companies, the Toyotas and NECs and Ricoh, Sonix,
Suntory,
you name it. So, and there's established relationships with a lot of those companies with New Zealand, but generally speaking, the presidents and chairmen of the companies haven't visited New Zealand. It's certainly up and coming middle management level have. But what we want to do is, and we'll be looking to when the Prime Minister comes up, we've already held about four sort of rugby business related dinners, and that's bringing together the executives from the team sponsoring rugby together with the Japan Rugby Football Union, John Kirwan, and former Prime Minister Mori, who heads the Japan Rugby Football Union. We've invited him down to Mr. McCulley invited him down to New Zealand to see the Bledisloe Cup in Christchurch, and he really enjoyed that. What we would like to try and achieve is, with Japan participating in the World Cup next year, and particularly with them playing the All Blacks 16th of September in Hamilton, to get them to that game, and senior people, and to bring together New Zealand senior business leaders with those Japanese business leaders, and try and you know, identify new business opportunities. You know, because I think the view of New Zealand from Japan is still a little bit dominated by, you know, sort of the clean, green, beautiful climate, beautiful environment, and then New Zealand as a world-class agriculture, you know, producer of dairy, beef, sheep meat products. But, you know, we want to sort of get across the message that there's a whole area of creative and innovative industry, film industry. Already there's a lot of Japanese companies who do their advertisements in New Zealand because of the environment. And so it shows Canon, for example, did the advertisements for their new camera in New Zealand because you get the clearest photos of the most beautiful mountains and scenery and so on. So, you know,
that's been the change of season as well.
Prior
to coming here, I used to project manage photo shoots down in New Zealand, so it's take Japanese teams. So because there was always a season ahead, you could shoot summer range in New Zealand, summer, and then it was just ready for the promotional material in summer Japan the following year, and each season. So, and plus at the moment it's very reasonable.
Clearly, also we want to encourage more tourism from Japan to New Zealand. Fortunately, it's grown this year. It's up in the first 6 months of this year. It's up 18% on the same period last year. But last year took a dip with the swine flu. So it's good to see at least that was a temporary dip. But you know, it's still, even with the improved figures, it's something like 85,000 people a year compared with the peak immediately after the September 11, which was about 170,000.
You'll be expecting that number to go up again, I assume, during the World Cup, like next year.
Yeah, we definitely expect the number to increase, but whether it'll be, and whether it will be a sort of a substitution, because I mean, there's only a certain amount of accommodation available. So whether it will be a sort of a substitution from the ongoing sort of tourism to rugby-related tourism or not, I think sort of remains to be seen. With the World Cup, I mean, what we want to do is, yes, promote New Zealand as a tourist destination, great place to enjoy sort of great wine, food, terrific lodges, golf, other, you know, sort of handicrafts, whatever, but also creating the new business linkages, but at the same time also, you know, suggesting to Japanese rugby fans that go down and support your team because you're going to be hosting in 2019, and we can share the experience of, you know, what was involved in hosting in 2011, and sort of build a really good relationship on rugby, and then through those rugby connections, given that the sponsors of rugby are the major corporates and the major universities, to build sort of wider linkages between Japan and New Zealand in that way. So rugby is the real focus for us going right through to at least to the Cup next year, and then beyond, hopefully, for, you know, till Japan hosts it.